Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. It's our weekly State House Reporters Roundtable. If you have a question about what's going on down at the State House and in state government and politics, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513. So what could a political disaster for the Republican governor of New Jersey have to do with the Republican governor of Ohio? That and more is on the plate today. Joining us is Joe Ingles of the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau. Joe, welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Mark Kovac, he's a reporter for the Youngstown Vindicator.
Happy Monday.
Happy Monday. That's the spirit. And Jackie Borchardt, she was formerly a reporter for the Dayton Daily News. She's now an Ohio politics and government reporter for the Cleveland Plain Dealer and the Northeast Ohio Media Group. Jackie, welcome to the show.
Thanks. Happy to be here.
All righty. So, as I started out the program, what could a I shouldn't call it a political disaster per se. I mean, certainly it's a big mess, but will it be a disaster for him? Well, I guess that's yet to be seen. But he is, of course, the Republican governor of the state of New Jersey, a darling by almost any measure in politics, I should say, until last week when it was revealed that some members of his inner circle staff apparently had a hand in shutting down some lanes of the George Washington Bridge. It is the allegedly, or been described as the busiest bridge in the world. So enough of that complaining on Monday mornings in Columbus. The lanes were apparently shut down in retaliation for the lack of support from the mayor of Fort Lee, New Jersey. Never heard of Fort Lee, New Jersey before. But furthermore, it's a Democrat. The mayor is a Democrat. So who knows? Governor Christie is saying that he couldn't have picked the mayor out of a lineup, but the evidence is pretty damning that some of his staff could. At least two from his inner circle and aide and a political advisor are off those respective payrolls. So what does something like this mean, the Christie effect? How do his troubles affect Kasich, John Kasich in Ohio or not? Joe Ingles?
Well, I think, you know, first of all, there are several answers to that question. If you look at his Republican base, the people who back him, I would say that this right now at this point doesn't affect him much at all. But I think in the bigger scheme of things, if you look at his why people tend to gravitate toward Chris Christie, what they like about him, they like about his, his take no prisoner style, the way he talks about people, the way he, you know, when he wants to tackle a problem, he'll say, this is it. We're going to do it. And, you know, if you don't like it, you can go stand over there in the corner. He's got that kind of bravado. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, people tend to like that. But it also, in this case, when you're talking about Chris Christie, you know, having to defend himself, he's put himself out there pretty much. He said at the end of last week in his news conference that he had nothing to do with this. He had no knowledge of it, that it all happened, you know, under the radar. He didn't know anything about it. But, you know, a lot of political pundits are saying, you know, that's really hard to believe because he seems to be the person who runs a pretty tight ship mm-hmm. and knows a lot about a lot that goes on in his office. So it's hard for, you know, for some people to believe that. And also you've got this whole issue that now if anything comes back that shows he knew about it, he's a liar. He's already put himself out there to be a liar because he's been so adamant that he didn't know anything about it. So there's a lot hinging on what comes out in the future and the way that this plays to a national audience. But right now, he's safe. I mean, as far as damage, with what we know at this point, it seems to be something that he can overcome.
Well, and Joe said bravado, but I think a lot of people would also say another B word, bullying. And there's been collections online of Christie bullying moments where he's, you know, pushing back against a teachers union rep or mm-hmm. or certain people on his travels that happen to get caught on tape like everything is now.
Meaning it wouldn't be beyond his ken to do something like this.
Right. And I see and it's funny because you can look at each of those instances. I watched one of them last night and you can look at each of them. And depending on what light you want to look at it, it could be bravado that he's getting things done and he's not hemming and hawing and he's being straightforward. And then, you know, it's a fine line between the two. And I think, and we've already started to see this, but I think in Ohio, you're going to see Democrats trying to tie Christie's bullying or bravado to Kasich. And I've seen it somewhere that, you know, they're both bullies, they're friends, and they've got all these things in common. I don't think that's going to stick the way the news story is unfolding right now, unless there's something bigger that comes out. But that's certainly something that's being attempted.
He is the chairman of the Republican Governors Association, which means that New Jersey Governor Chris Christie is expected to probably campaign for Republican governors up for re-election. Of course, Mark Kovac, Governor Kasich, is up for re-election, and he's already rushed to his side, not literally, but figuratively, and saying that he's in support of him. Is a Christie visit during the campaign expected?
Well, I would think it was before. Mm-hmm. Again, it seems like we're pretty early. I mean, and this is all blown up and it's scandal, but there's got to be more evidence and more things that's going to be reported on the Christie scandal. And as that comes out, I don't know how far do you start distancing yourself?
Well, you know, we call it just a scandal, but the fact is that the lanes were closed down for many hours over the course of 4 days. EMTs couldn't get to patients that were waiting for transportation for medical care. At least one person died. No one's been able to, I don't think, draw a completely straight line to it. But there could be a lot of ramifications from this shutdown, not just a political kerfuffle.
Yeah, except the family of that one person that died said that this shutdown had nothing to do with mm-hmm. that death. And, you know, if the family isn't going, you know, to place the blame there.
In that particular case,
In that particular case, you're right. It does have those elements to it. But, I mean, here's the other thing. If you talk to people on the street, I mean, seriously, there is no love for politicians out there in general. So I wonder how many ordinary average citizens think, oh, well, this isn't that big of a deal. Hmm. You know, it might not be that big of a stretch for ordinary people, just voters who, you know, are not working in politics and keeping every breath like we are. Mm-hmm. They might not see this as the big deal that we see it, you know, and it might not be the scandal that we're talking about. It might not be at that level.
I think the longer that the story goes on and stays in the news, the more that your average voter is going to think, hey, this isn't right, or this is going to influence my voting decisions. Like, I think already today there was a story about now Christie is being investigated for misuse of Sandy funds. So, like, this is, again, mm-hmm. another news cycle where Christie's name is in the news and it's negative.
And of course, on a national level, it's much more significant because he was considered a moderate front runner for the Republican nomination, perhaps.
And still is. I think he still is considered a moderate front runner. I don't think we're going to see a big change at this point. We're not seeing a big change. But I think, you know, the other thing is that when we look at this situation, even if he does come out that this has happened, what kind of political damage? Okay, so he lied about it. Okay, is that going to be enough political damage to really hurt him? That's an unknown.
Those kind of things, though, when they have so much on tape, you know, so much recorded of him saying, I had no idea, I absolutely positively had no idea.
How many of those politicians that have done stuff like that, Ann, have been reelected? A lot. I mean, have a politician lie and they get reelected and people put them back in office. So I don't know that that's a death knell.
But at least in Ohio, if they're somehow able to come up with some kind of comparable scenario with Kasich being a bully, which is what they're going to try to do, if they were to do that, and there's enough of Tea Party people, the conservative folks are irritated enough. Hmm. If you add lying politician on top of that, you know, I don't know that they're going to elect their own candidate, but they're going to maybe exit, you know, the Kasich ranks in enough numbers that it's going to help a Democratic candidate challenging him, I would think.
I mean, don't you fully expect someone to bring back the video of him berating to the EPA employees? Complaining about the state cop or
the idiot cop moment you're talking about, right? There's so many different.
I can see the ad now. Yeah. It's flashing.
I can't even imagine they won't. But now they can link it to another governor, another Republican.
Yeah. There's all kinds of shaky video clips out there of the governor saying very interesting things here, you know, and it will be interesting this cycle to see, you know, because we're really getting more into the internet stuff and the video, the citizens' videos, the raw footage that's out there. It'll be interesting to see how they pick up that stuff and put it in the campaign ads and how they use it and what kind of effect it has.
I do remember, though, when Kasich was running against Strickland, there was an article in one of the alternatives that basically went through, and they had interviewed people that Kasich had allegedly been mean to through the years, waiters and people like that. And it was a very negative Kasich article where Kasich was concerned, and it didn't get traction in that race. And, you know, he's running against Governor Strickland. And one of the prevailing things people said about Governor Strickland is, hey, he's a nice guy, but hey, we lost jobs. You know, that you heard that over and over and over. So if he's running against Governor Strickland, that kind of thing comes out and it didn't get traction then, is it really going to get traction now? That's another question.
And we're not exactly sure who he's going to be running against this time.
Right.
So, and it certainly won't be another Ted Strickland. At least at this point, we know that. Why don't we take a break now? And then when we return, we can get back to some of the more of the issues that he'll be facing in the 2014 reelection bid. So stay with us. This is the Reporters Roundtable from the State House on All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to our State House Reporters Roundtable on All Sides with Dan Fisher. If you have a question about state government politics in Ohio, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can also post your question or comment on the Facebook page. We have Mark Kovac from the Youngstown Vindicator, Joe Engels from the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau, Jackie Borchardt. She now reports for the Cleveland Plain Dealer and the Northeast Ohio Media Group. So what are the other issues then? So we've got Chris Christie may be something out there in the future. We don't know yet. What else, Joe?
The bigger piece here.
The for sure piece is
what happens in the fall with the looming issues that are out there that could be on the ballot. For example, if right to work is on the ballot, if we see the gay marriage issue come to the forefront, if those kind of things come around in the fall, that I think that pretty much whatever happens with Chris Christie is put on the back burner.
Now, all right, let's take right to work. This is the for the private sector what Senate Bill 5
is,
and the legislature and issue 2 was a few years ago to the public sector workforce. In other words, it would ban unions.
Yeah, you wouldn't have to contribute to a union to work a job that is essentially a union job. Correct.
Okay.
And we've seen already, you're seeing ads, you're hearing ads about, you know, from the people who want to defeat right to work. They're getting out there saying, now this is what it is, and it's not workplace freedom. It's, you know, it's taking away good jobs. And, you know, so we're already seeing that. I think there is an undercurrent of concern by unions that might actually hit.
Sure.
If it does, you know, we all saw what happened with Senate Bill 5. If that hits the ballot this fall, there's going to be a lot of union support out there bringing out Democrats.
Right. It'll bring them to the ballot in an otherwise possibly unexciting gubernatorial race.
Right.
And but that'll also take away their resources. You know, the unions typically back Democratic candidates. So if you've Ed Fitzgerald, you know, if they're focused on right to work, that's where their money is going to go too, and their volunteers. And I'm sure you can say, yeah, oh, and also vote for Ed because he's against this too. But it definitely changes the dynamics.
Would they make a link to the governor's support for Senate Bill 5/issue 2 a few years ago?
Oh, sure.
There's a connection.
They continue to try to do that.
Yeah.
They continue to try to keep Senate Bill 5 alive, although I don't know how important that is to your regular voter out on the street anymore. You know, it's defeated Kasich. Didn't pick it back up, tried not to pick up the pieces of it. So I don't know. Has anybody heard an updated signature count on the campaign? The last time I checked, I wasn't getting the impression that they were anywhere near qualifying for the ballot. Has anybody heard lately where they are?
I have not.
Last I heard was 100,000, and they were doing some other push.
Will we know in February for that or later?
I mean, they have until July, to turn in signatures. Yeah.
But they need, what, 350, 380, 380,000, 350,000, something like that. And they're doing it.
Valid signatures.
And I don't think they're using, are they using paid circulators at this point? I didn't think so. So
I don't know.
I just don't know how realistic it is to think that that gets on the ballot without some kind of outside support coming in and helping them.
You know, this is politics. We can sit here and it might not be realistic today, but, you know, 3 weeks from now, you know, how things change in the political world. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're trying to, you know, there's definitely, if you listen to mainstream Republicans, they're trying to stifle that issue. But I think the Democrats really kind of want that issue to go on the ballot, and they're doing everything they can to remind people of it. And they also want to, you know, I'm sure that we're going to hear, whether it's on the ballot or not, we're going to hear the Democrats saying, hey, remember that Senate Bill 5? Well, you know, Governor Kasich backed that. And if you reelect him, guess what? He's going to have the opportunity to go in there and he's going to do it again. I guarantee we're probably going to hear it. I shouldn't say guarantee, probably.
I think that ad has already been made, actually, Joe. Yeah, I think that ad's already been created.
But
it's
I think we're
going to
hear it a lot more.
Just hit the air.
But is Jackie right that there's going to be a resource problem if they have to battle an issue as well as a race?
No. I think that they will use a lot of resources. I think she's right about that. But I also think that Ohio is an important state. We'll see if that issue comes to the forefront. I think we're going to see a lot of money come into the state that wouldn't have been there otherwise.
And the issue 5 is going to be brought up no matter what.
Mm-hmm. It will be. Yeah. It will be. But I think, you know, if there's a threat, if people perceive a threat to it, that's where it, you know, and I think that they're going, you know, the Democrats are going to try to make sure people do see a threat there so that they, you know, think about it.
Obviously the economy is going to be an issue, but I always hesitate. I mean, it's going to be an issue, but we don't know what the economy is going to be like in, say, July or August or Labor Day when things really kick off.
Well, and so much of voters' perception of what the economy is doing is how they feel it personally.
Right. And at that moment.
And at that moment. So they're not going to look at 2, 3, 4 months or years of unemployment numbers or really, you know, drill down. They're going to look at, oh, they saw the news and unemployment is up, unemployment is down. Or, oh, I just lost my job. Oh, my cousin's been out of work for a year. Or, oh, I'm doing fine. I've got jobs and money saved away and we're fine.
Jobs Ohio, how and under what circumstances would that become an issue? We already know, we've talked about it plenty of times, the fact that there is no open records with Jobs Ohio. And as journalists, that's a whole issue, and there's a lot we don't know about it. But under what circumstances would it become an issue in a race?
If Jobs Ohio doesn't come up with a lot more victories from the workforce standpoint, I mean, like this Dayton company, not Dayton, but Montgomery County company they announced last week.
At the Marine Point.
If they can't say, hey, look, here we started Jobs Ohio, when we got this company, and have a nice laundry list of, you know, thousands of jobs that they can point to, then I don't think Jobs Ohio was as much of an issue. But the last, was it a quarterly report they came out with? Wasn't that good before Christmas? A lot of criticism of the performance that's there.
Given how much money they have access to. So. That we don't know how they're allowed to, we are not allowed to know how they spend the money either.
Right.
So
right.
The only thing we know is the jobs numbers they give us.
Yeah. If you can trust them, and
because nobody can audit
them, it's hard
to
verify, you know. So,
and if they're, you know, if we find that, again, that's one of those big ifs. If we find that there are a lot of questions raised about Jobs Ohio, how money's being spent, things that are going on in that organization, and that happens to surface, you know, at the election time, that could definitely have an impact on how people feel about Governor Kasich. I mean, let's remember the whole investigation into the governor's mansion, and that came about, you know, as Governor Strickland was running, and,
that's right.
You know, people, you know, were paying attention to that, and it ended up not being a very big deal at all after the election. But, you know, going in with having something hanging over your head certainly is harder to fight the battle.
Don in Cincinnati, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Don.
Good morning. I had actually a second question that I was going to think about, too, or ask you to think about, at least, in the way of medical news in Ohio. The first question is, with Governor Kasich's implementation of Medicaid in Ohio, do people know that Medicaid is only a loan, and it's a loan at the full rate, not an insurance payer's rate, but the full rate for medical services in a hospital, whereby if you go to the hospital and say you need some extensive treatment and have to have $20,000 or $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 worth of a bill or more, that comes out of your inheritance to your kids. Oh. They don't get anything. The state gets it all at non-insurance level rates, where if you have to pay $5 for a bandage, you pay $5 for a bandage, and it comes out of your house when you die, and your kids get nothing.
Okay, Mark Kovac, you want to talk about that?
Yeah, I think that's an argument that you're going to hear going into the election cycle from conservatives who say expanding Medicaid, if I'm following the line of reasoning here, is, you know, adding to our federal debt, and there's no way we're going to be able to repay it. It's not fiscally responsible. You know, I think that's an argument you're going to hear going into the election, and that gets back to, you know, whether folks in the Tea Party and your conservative voters start abandoning ship, abandoning Kasich, and either not supporting him or supporting some other opponent, a libertarian or otherwise. But I mean, there's a lot of anger in among the conservative community about the Medicaid expansion.
I think Don's comment, though, was a little confusing, and I'm not sure I'm an authority on, getting into what it's going to cost my progeny if I go on Medicaid. So it was what the governor did was expand Medicaid
To more cover people. Yeah. Working poor people that couldn't afford the coverage. That's basically what that did. And I think what Don's referring to is that under standard Medicaid rules, as they have been before Obamacare, you basically could not have, they would go in and take your house. And if you were going to go into a nursing home, for example, on Medicaid, you were only allowed to have so much left. You had to use your personal resources first. I think that's where Don was coming from on that. I'm not sure under this new, I'm not an expert by any means on the Affordable Care Act, and I'm not sure how this expansion of Medicaid actually works concerning that provision. But I do think there's another factor that's going to be at play here, and we're seeing it starting to come out nationally. I was reading an article yesterday, I believe it was the New York Times, I'm not sure which one. One of the big newspapers had an article about how rural hospitals in states that have not expanded.
Rural.
Yes, that's the word. That is the word.
R-U-R-A-L.
That's one of those words I can't say. But anyway, those hospitals are having a really hard time right now under the if they haven't expanded Medicaid. So in those states where Medicaid expansion hasn't occurred, some of those hospitals are saying they're not sure they're going to be able to make it through the end of the year because it does change the reimbursements. And that was something that you'll remember Governor Kasich was talking about when he said we've got to expand Medicaid. That was one of the arguments he made for it.
Well, I don't think Medicaid is going to disappear from the state house discussions either. I think the expansion debate last year really opened a lot of lawmakers' eyes to the fact that Medicaid is a huge part of the state budget. And, you know, especially if someone identifies as being fiscally conservative, that is a prime area to trim and cut and try and make more efficient. So I think this year, too, in the next couple months, we'll see more reforms, or not even reforms, but just small changes to the program to try and just make it as efficient as possible.
You're listening to All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Judith in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Judith.
Hi, how are you? This is a great show. I really appreciate it. I really called to talk about the charter schools, but I have another question for you that I think is more important. I want to know why poor people, especially single moms, kids are targeted in the public school system by putting the boys, black boys primarily, in special education, and then doping them up with Ritalin when Ritalin is addictive as crack cocaine.
Judith, we're talking about politics, state government and politics. We're not talking specifically about education issues. I don't know if anybody on the panel wants to take a swipe at that.
I really don't.
Yeah, no. I think that's way kind of off topic, Judith, but thanks for listening. We really appreciate it. We're talking about state government and politics, things that are on the plate at the General Assembly. political issues coming up this year. We have a all the statewide executive offices are up for election this year. Been talking about the governor's race. There are Democrats set to run in every race now, right?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah.
So. Endorsed Democratic candidates.
Okay. Yep.
So that's better than usual sometimes.
Seems really early for
early
those
start,
endorsements,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah, it does seem early.
The earlier you start, the earlier you can start raising money and getting your name out, especially if you haven't run statewide before, which if you look at the field, they need help there.
Yeah. None of them. The only one I think that's run statewide is the one that's running Libertarian.
Well, David Pepper ran statewide
David
last
Pepper,
year.
That's right. That's right. True. Yep. Right. Yep. Sorry, David Pepper. Tom Zawistowski of the Tea Party. He often speaks for the Tea Party in the state of Ohio, even though there is no organization per se. He says he's going to come up with another candidate to run against John Kasich in the primary. The last guy dropped out, Stephen O. Who's he going to come up with? Do we have any ideas?
Well, when I asked him that, he was still looking. He said they're talking to people. They're looking for someone. He says, this is really a big undertaking because most of us who would run for office work. We have jobs, and we don't want, we don't have the party machinery. We don't have all the ability to go out there and raise money like the big parties do, and that's really the strength in our candidates, but it's also hard for us to, run for office under that circumstance. So anyway, he's still looking, and I think they've had a hard time trying to find candidates. If you listen between the lines, there's definitely a difficulty there.
How can an organization that embraces a lack of organization come up with a candidate? And I don't mean to sound glib.
I think that's the big problem. I think that's why they haven't found someone yet. There is a coalition of groups, the Ohio Liberty Coalition.
And they get together.
They get together
and
they have, the last couple of years, they've had an annual summer convention of type thing. But it's mostly focused on training on educating people on certain issues so that they can go out in their community and talk, sort of like the community level of leadership. And I don't know if they really don't have the structure to bring someone to anything higher than maybe a state representative office, because it does take a lot and it takes a lot of money and a lot of time. And just knowing which forms to fill out when is sometimes a huge undertaking when you're running for any office. And then finding volunteers to help you go out and canvass. It's a big time suck. Like Joe was saying, if you have a job, you're not going to have time to do this. And I think the Tea Party would find some comfort in knowing that the Green Party and the Libertarian Party, Socialist Party, all those guys too, most of them work. And they're faced with the same thing. So that when you had the state last year when they passed the minor parties bill, which changed the number of signatures that they would need to collect, and it went from 500 to 28,000, you have all these people saying, how am I going to collect those?
And that, of course, has been a court's ruled.
Just last week, the court granted a preliminary injunction, so they won't have to worry about collecting that many signatures. But already, then they say, how are we ever supposed to get anyone other than a Republican and a Democrat in an office? It's a valid point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is a valid point. And I think, let's get past the primary. Let's assume that you can get a Tea Party candidate out there. I think that in even if you get past the primary, what you're going to find is that when people go down to the general election, they're looking to, even if they align with Tea Party values or Green Party values or whatever the minor party is, oftentimes they will go for the candidate that they think has a chance of winning. They'll compromise those principles. They'll say, so-and-so over there, my vote counts if I vote for candidate X. But if I vote for the guy I really want, it's just a wasted vote. And so you see that a lot. That's a voter behavior that comes about in a general election. So even if we get past this primary and whatever happens there, the fact is that people don't necessarily vote for who they like They vote for who they think has the best shot of winning.
But do you think that would happen in a primary election if you did have a challenge to Kasich? Because you typically primaries will draw the electorate from the right or the left. And you saw that with the presidential primary.
The vanguard, the most.
Right. In Ohio, you know, you had Santorum was right up there with Romney. But in a general election, Santorum, I don't think, would have fared anywhere near as well.
I think in a primary, yes. I think you're going to find the Republican Party has all the money. They can go out in a primary and basically squash the Tea Party. And if someone, you know, is thinking about voting for the Tea Party candidate, they would think, hey, you know, Governor Kasich's going to win this thing, so I might as well go with him. I don't want to attach my cart to a horse that's not going to run.
I don't know. In the primary, I'm not sure what the Tea Party gains necessarily from running a primary challenger, because they're not going to win that, I don't think, barring some crazy huge scandal.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess the only thing they could gain is getting enough votes in the primary to show, hey, look, we have this many people who don't like what you're doing, and these people aren't going to back you in November. So you need to change what you're doing now before we get to November. That's the only thing I could see.
Send a message.
Yeah.
That's the only,
but if you're not organized and you really want to send a message and you're really tired of the governor and what he's doing, I would think you'd put all your resources behind some other candidate going into November. I mean, I don't know what if they gain enough in a primary to matter.
There's a lot at stake for the Tea Party here right now, because this whole issue of challenging Governor Kasich and then their challenger dropped out and now they're looking for someone else. They don't look particularly strong at this point. And, you know, the Tea Party has always been something that Republican candidates have always looked back and kind of said, hey, where are they standing on this issue? What do they think about this? And they've had some clout in the past politically.
Well, in the legislature, they have quite a few
Tea Party Republicans in the legislature, sure. Yeah, and I think, though, what they're, you know, if they're perceived to be less strong than some of the lawmakers, some of the political leaders in the Republican Party think that the Tea Party is, if that strength weakens, we could see the Tea Party lose clout just because of the things that they're doing. You know, you remember Tom Zawistowski that you mentioned. He ran against Matt Borges last year to be the head of the Ohio Republican Party, and he lost big. So this whole thing with Stefano dropping out of the race, that's just another example. And if the Republican Party thinks that they can basically go ahead and do what they want and not pay a lot of attention to the Tea Party because it's not going to hurt them in the end, I think we're going to, you know, see that loss of clout that the Tea Party's had.
What's the deadline for the March primaries? They need the candidate in place.
Is it February 5th?
It's February, yeah.
Okay, so less than a month away.
Mm-hmm.
You're listening to our State House Reporters panel. If you have a question or comment about state government, state politics, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We have a panel of State House reporters today, as we do every Monday. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513. What do you think is going to be the biggest issue coming up this year in the governor's race? 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Now, our caller earlier said she was going to ask about charters and then decided to go off on another track. But what about charters? The Columbus Dispatch reported that there's about a third of them have gone under since they became legal in the state of Ohio around 97, 98. 17 in Columbus?
17 in Columbus in the last year.
Right. So
yeah.
What does that say? What's happening?
Well, obviously, a lot of charters are having problems.
They aren't making ends meet.
Yeah, they're not making ends meet, or they're not making the grade, or both. And, you know, this is a problem because they're getting state money just like any state school would. They get the money. And if they're not, you know, if the children who are going to those schools are not getting the education, then what happens to those kids when this charter school fails? They go back into the public school system and maybe even in worse shape than they were when they came to the charter to begin with, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, and what happens to the money that they received? You know, that's an issue too. If you have a school shut down, you know, they've received in some cases, you know, hundreds of thousands of state dollars to educate children, and now they, you know, they're not doing that
and
anymore.
These schools are shutting down in October and November. It's not like they're getting through a full year.
Right. Right. And, you know, you don't have the same setup at these schools that you do, you know, in a public school. You have taxpayers, you have parents who are really able to hold the school accountable. And you don't necessarily have that in these charter schools. And a lot of these charter schools, the management is not really approachable for parents, taxpayers, and people to get involved and, you know, really have a say in how things are done. So that's another factor to consider. It's not that all charter schools are bad. I'm certainly not saying that. Mm-hmm. So anyone who wants to draw that conclusion, there are very good charter schools out there. But some of these charter schools really have a problem when it comes to management.
Well, and the ones that don't have issues, like you're saying, you know, they are making the grade and they are connecting with parents and they have a structure that is approachable and all of those things. So I think the biggest issue in this then is, so it is a shocking number when you tally it all up that, you know, 30%, that seems huge. When you look at the failure of regular public schools or closings of regular public schools, it's far less. So then the question is, well, what have we been doing then in the last 10, 15 years? And what can you do going forward?
Yeah, and what happens in these charter schools when they go belly up and they close their doors? What happens to the computers, to the desks, to the equipment, to all the things that taxpayers have put money into so that that charter school could be successful? Who gets the money? You know, where does that go? Do they sell all that? Does that come back to the state?
Do we know? I mean, is that just an unanswered question at this point?
I don't know. I'm interested in finding out. That's something I'd like to call around and find out about.
Mark and Hilliard, you're on the air. You have a question about Jobs Ohio?
Well, I was curious of how much of an issue this is going to be in the upcoming election, and whether there's going to be any transparency over this organization or this thing or not. And also, have they been able to prove what job has been accredited to this?
Well, let's review first. Thanks, Mark, for that call. We'll talk about that. Let's review first what Jobs Ohio is. There used to be the Department of Development, and within that, there was a jobs creation function.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They kind of deconstructed
the Department of Development
mm-hmm. and in the place of the jobs creation, put it together Jobs Ohio, which is funded by the sale of bonds on the
liquor profits.
But they say that somehow
they're leasing the bonding or whatever.
It's very complicated, but it's all based on liquor profits.
And they're saying bottom line is it's a private entity now, and even though it's funded with the profits from the liquor tax revenue,
yeah,
which is public money, it's not a public entity.
Yeah, because they're leasing it as a private entity.
So the question he had was, how do we know how many jobs they've created? We only know by what they tell us.
Yeah,
we do. But I mean, as someone who's covered the Department of Development, you know, the predecessor, how do we know that any of those jobs there were created?
Well, disputed.
Yeah, the things that drives me nuts about all this is, you know, trying to cover the Department of Development before Jobs Ohio was not an easy task.
Right.
It's not like they were transparent and turning over information.
It was useful.
I called on the morning that a public meeting started to get the agenda, and the Department of Development sent my request to their legal counsel. That's the kind of stuff that they did, you know.
True, but...
But now, I mean, so I don't know...
It's a blanket no.
Right, I'm not in any better position, I don't think, with Jobs Ohio than I was with the Department of Development, but...
The issue with all of these grants and credits, whether it was Jobs Ohio or Development, is they're good for... The promise is that you will create or keep these jobs and you have X number of years to fulfill that commitment. So what we're now seeing, and we've only had, what, 2 or 3 years of an annual report done by the Attorney General to look at these state-issued
and no
credits
more
and grants
after that,
to say, you know, who's made good on their promise and who hasn't, how many jobs were actually filled and how many weren't. But those are all from grants and credits that were awarded 2-3 years ago. I mean, they're from the Strickland administration. They're not from Jobs Ohio era.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong. We still have the tax credit authority that's still in place. Those tax credits, do those still go to the controlling board? I thought they did. I could be totally wrong on that. But I think because there's still a tax credit authority, there's still some kind of public accountability through that, isn't there?
I think the Attorney General report will still continue to do that. But if you look at the tax credit authority, I mean, they're unanimously approved. It's almost like a rubber stamp.
Yeah.
And it was like that way before Jobs Ohio, to be fair, but also now.
It's really hard to walk back on these agreements 3-4 years out and look to see how many jobs have been created. I mean, you're getting into this quasi-public-private relationship. And as Mark says, you know, you're dealing with attorneys and you're dealing with layers of bureaucracy that are just astounding sometimes when you're trying to do these kind of stories. So consequently, we don't really see how many promises are broken and how many promises are kept.
So how does this become a campaign issue, though, if it's so complicated?
Well, it becomes a campaign issue if Ohio's unemployment remains above the national unemployment rate, if we still see an uptick there, you know, and the general person on the street says, hey, you know, governor, Republicans in the State House, you promised me if you created Jobs Ohio, we were going to see better performance and we were going to see jobs. And we're not seeing it. Where are all the jobs this entity is supposed to be creating? I think from a more simplistic level, that's how it could come out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. If people are skeptical, if questions are raised, if there's any controversy that comes about, anything that is reported that people can hang a hat on, those kind of things, you know, that can definitely put the Jobs Ohio issue forefront in voters' minds.
I think both candidates want to use it. You know, Kasich obviously will point to it as something he did right away to get Ohio on the fast track to creating jobs and better, you know, have better communication between for these state credits and grants. And then the other side will also want to use it and point out the secrecy, the lack of transparency, the fact that the reports are disappointing or just any little thing that has gone wrong or has been an issue, that will be pointed at. So I mean, both will use it. I guess it we'll see in the next couple months which argument kind of, you know, weighs more at the end.
Yeah, what gets traction going into the election?
Well, let's talk about as far as we know the candidate, the Democrat who will run against John Kasich in November, Ed Fitzgerald. We're still waiting to see who the replacement is going to be for his former running mate, Senator Eric Kearney, who left with a cloud of not really controversy, but just a cloud hanging over him because of his tax debts and his mismanagement or whatever you want to call it of his business or not paying taxes and so on. I guess I think the Bureau of Workers' Comp payments or lack thereof were the straw that broke the camel's back on that. But what's the deal with the running mate? I thought it was going to be
soon after
the decision
is imminent.
Imminent.
Which could be, you know, it could have happened while we're in here, you know, talking on the radio.
Every name that I hear pop up suddenly pops down, you know, except maybe Representative Debbie Phillips. I keep hearing her name come up from down in Athens.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've heard people out of Cincinnati and you hear they've all
but
turned
down.
But
what does Debbie Phillips bring to the ticket? It's a very scantily populated area.
It's not Northeast Ohio.
It's not Northeast Ohio.
She's not a white man.
Southwest Ohio. It's nothing. Yeah.
When I look at this, I think the candidates that are mentioned most often that are most likely to attract attention are those who come from either the Cincinnati or Columbus area, and maybe candidates who bring a different perspective, women, African Americans, people who have a different background who could combine with Ed Fitzgerald and bring in, you know, solidify large blocks of voters. I think that's what we're probably going to see, is someone that fits that prototype will be chosen to run with him. But I don't know who that will be. I've heard all the names, too, and it's a mystery.
Representative Debbie Phillips was the subject of the organic quinoa cooked over a dung fire comment from the governor's spokesman.
I wasn't going to bring that up, but
you got to bring up the quinoa. Come on.
Yeah, cooked over a dung fire.
Yep.
Yeah.
I still can't, to this day, eat quinoa without thinking about that.
Because she's
perceived by being, you know, as being an earthy,
from Athens,
you know, more liberal, hippie, whatever you want to call it.
Have you ever met her?
Yes, I have, and that was not the takeaway that I had from
so
it.
So great,
yeah.
Email from Nancy on the topic of schools. I would be interested in your panel's comments on House Bill 167, introduced by Senator Tavares, of course, of Columbus, to repeal the zero tolerance requirement in schools that has contributed to disproportionate suspensions of minority and disabled students. I'm thinking it has a good chance since there is now federal interest in this issue. Of course, zero tolerance are those rules where even if you bring a plastic knife to school in your lunch box to cut your sandwich with, you're getting kicked out, those kind of things.
Yeah, which a lot of people perceive as a lack of common sense. I mean, seriously, you know, you see these stories and the first thing you look in the comment lines underneath the stories and people are talking about how no one has any common sense and that this rule shouldn't be used as the way to allow this kind of thing
to happen.
There has
to be more discretion.
Yeah. Yeah.
That bill is up for a second hearing this week on Wednesday.
Which is kind of amazing if it's getting a second hearing.
Getting a second hearing, so I assume.
It seems like an idea, though, that would appeal to kind of the
libertarians
right? in the General Assembly, you know, that the schools, that there is a lot of gray and that the schools shouldn't just say, you know, all or nothing, that things should be decided on a case-by-case basis.
So maybe. Proposal by House Republicans to cut income taxes by revamping the state taxation of the natural gas and oil produced by the fracking industry apparently would not generate a significant tax cut for Ohioans, despite the hype. So what's happening with that?
Well, it's up for another hearing this week, opponent mm-hmm. testimony. The industry is behind it. They say that in testimony last week, they said that the tax rate proposed here is actually higher than what the governor proposed, and that the oil and gas folks are paying their fair share. And, you know, in this bill, there's some tax breaks for them. They would direct proceeds first toward regulatory efforts and then to a tax cut. The governor's not on board at this point, as far as I understand. He wants a bigger tax increase. So we'll see.
On the fracking.
On the fracking. It's got House Republican support. I think it's got Speaker Batchelder's name as a co-sponsor. Mm-hmm. So.
You know, the fact that the oil and gas companies like this proposal, it makes me want to know what those tax breaks really are, how those really work in this, because, you know, they were very adamantly opposed, as you remember, to mm-hmm. the severance tax that Governor Kasich had put out there. And whatever's being used to sweeten this deal to get them on board, I think that's probably where we need to give some more examination.
Mm-hmm. And the Legislative Service Commission, the nonpartisan group over at the State House, looked at this bill and they could not come up with a final projection for how much this will raise and how much
it will. No, the point of the fiscal note is to say how much it would cost or generate.
Exactly.
Right.
And that was not there. So the estimate that everyone's working with now is from the industry. And even considering that, you would only get, I think it was $100 million income tax cut over 10 years, which is less than 1% of the state's revenue from income tax. So, you know, there's a couple buckets that have to be filled before you can go to the income tax cut. And that's all dependent, too, on how much then is produced. And if it turns out that Ohio isn't, you know, this oil gushing, you know,
yes.
haven for drillers, then you're not even going to see that. So, you know, and then the politicians will say, well, we got this great tax cut, income tax cut. We cut income taxes, but we won't know even if that will happen at this point.
Yeah.
Well, I hate to leave us hanging on a cliff like that, but maybe we'll learn more by next week. For now, I want to say thanks to Joe Engels of the Ohio Public Radio Statehouse News Bureau. Thanks for joining us.
It's great to be here.
And Mark Kovac, of course, reporter for the Youngstown Vindicator. Mark, thanks for joining us again.
Have a good week.
And Jackie Borchardt, she is with the Northeast Ohio Media Group, which includes the Cleveland Plain Dealer. Thanks, Jackie, for joining us today.
Thanks.
Thanks to everybody for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.